Yo, everybody, welcome back to Brand New Techish. I'm back again, Michael Bahane, the CEO of PeopleOfColorInTech.com, and I am joined with the amazing
Abadesi, co-founder and chief community officer at Alpha.com.
We've got a new intro for you now. That's not what the intro is. Yeah, new things.
So I roll, man. So I roll.
Yeah, so we're going to have a really exciting episode. We're going to break down all the wonderful stuff.
But first, a word from our sponsors, datafinder.org. Think back to the last time you signed up for a service online. Do you agree to the privacy policy without reading it or even thinking about it?
Don't feel bad. We've all done it. Our new sponsor, datarightsfinder.org, is here to help.
Brought to you by Open Rights Group and Projects by IF. DataRightsFinder.org helps you to understand how entities such as banks and insurance providers are using data about you.
They'll help you get copies of data about you, ask companies to explain any automated decisions they've made, or even get data deleted.
So, if you want to take control of data, which I know you do, about yourself, then go to DataRightsFinder.org and tell them Techish sent you. Man, I feel sad. I feel really, really sad.
Why do you feel sad?
Because one of my heroes, like childhood heroes of my life, is officially banished.
Is he?
Yeah.
Are you going there? So if you don't know what we're talking about, the whole Michael Jackson. There's a new documentary coming out called, I think it's called Leaving Neverland.
Yes.
And basically two individuals that were friends with him at a young age now have come out and said, you know what, this guy abused me.
They were children. With him at a young age. They were kids.
But he had young friends though.
They were kids.
Yeah, they were kids. Yeah, you're right.
But when you say young friends, it makes it sound like they're like 21 or whatever. Yeah, like no, they were
right.
like
you're
10.
Right. I don't want to make light of the situation because if it is true, it's trash. So it's difficult. I mean, just to give a bit of context, one of the individuals in question did in his previous trial defend Michael Jackson and say nothing ever happened, and he's consistently said that.
Okay, was he paid to say that?
I don't think he was paid. I think he's arguing that essentially he was just groomed, and that Michael just framed it in a way where it was like, yo man, they're out to get us, and like he made it more about, yo, they don't understand us, they're out to get us, blah blah blah. So that's what he's claiming.
Wow.
I mean, it's not out. Documentary's not out yet. None of us have seen it.
Well, I read the article, an article from a journalist that watched it, and he was saying how, you know, he remembers the day Michael Jackson died. We all know where we were the day Michael Jackson died. I can remember that moment. I was like hanging with my friends. Some of my friends were at Glastonbury. I got a text from a friend at Glastonbury that was like, oh my God, is it true Michael Jackson's dead? Like rumors are going around, and I guess I couldn't get Wi-Fi. Maybe this was the pre-smartphone era. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Anyway.
2008, man. Like, iPhone had just come out. Yeah. Oof,
I'm getting old. Anyway. Then I was just like, no. And we just listened to Michael Jackson all night. Like, we just like played track after track after track. Now, the first time the story started surfacing, I was just like, conspiracy, trying to bring another black man down. Like, just because he's, you know, was black and then white and then his hair is all different. Like, you know, speaking in that voice. Like,
so
hey.
I'm saying the first time this recent allegation surfaced, you're saying, or you
as
mean
in,
or
like,
the court case back in the day?
I mean, I was too young to even remember the news. But in the 90s...
No, because there was... So the context is, in 93, there was an allegation.
Okay, I don't remember that.
He paid... Yeah, we're not going to remember that. We're not that old. He paid off the family, 20 mil apparently. Then there was a court case...
20? Oh, okay.
Yeah, there was a court case in 2000 and something where it was a criminal proceeding and he was found not guilty.
Okay.
On all charges, right? So just bringing everybody up to speed about what's happened chronologically. And then, so I'm saying to you, you're saying that when this article dropped, or when this whole new documentary,
when you first
heard about it, you were like, oh yeah, this is BS, blah, blah, blah.
Prior to this, because there have been rumors for a while.
Yeah,
and
of
like,
course. Yeah.
And I know some people that are just like, oh, I don't even listen to Michael Jackson's music because he's like, you know, whatever.
I'm going to keep it real. I have seen like a racial divide. I keep it 100. It's like, no, listen, we're riding for Michael. We all rode for Michael. Like a lot of us, especially like, okay, you have like his stans who just love Michael Jackson no matter what.
Mm.
And then obviously even the black community, like loyalty, we're loyal to our heroes. Like we're not that quick to throw you under the bus. Like, you know what I'm saying? You can change your face. You can change your skin. I mean, he claimed they had vitiligo, but his visual appearance did a 180.
Yeah.
And like, even then we were like, no, we still love Mike. We still love Mike. Cause he just gave us so many memories. Now me,
it's true.
I'm actually, fun fact, I'm actually named after Michael Jackson.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a fun fact. Yeah.
It's all coming out.
So I'm actually named after Michael Jackson.
Oh,
like,
wow.
And I mean, there's a lot of Michaels that are born in the 80s. There's a reason why. Because he was the GOAT. Like, and I grew up adoring Michael Jackson. Like, Michael Jackson was my.
Do you
like
moonwalk?
You said,
do you moonwalk?
Listen.
Thriller.
You got to pay man for that one. I actually can do it as well, but you got to pay man, innit?
Okay.
Well, if you do a Techish live show, I'll bring it out.
Okay.
So I was, I'm conflicted and hurt and devastated. Like, I've seen some people just be like, no, it's a conspiracy. And a lot of the things that they're saying are similar to what they said about the people that defended Bill Cosby, which is that Bill Cosby was trying to buy NBC, so they stopped him. Michael Jackson owned the Beatles catalog, so this is why they're trying to destroy his legacy. End of the day, none of us have been in those rooms. Only Michael Jackson and the ancestors really and truly know what was happening in those rooms. I don't know.
Do we have to stop listening to his music? Because
I don't think it's possible. I think that's like cancelling water, fam. That's like cancelling water.
Come on.
That's like saying the sky ain't blue no more. No, it is.
Cancelled R. Kelly.
Listen, R. Kelly is not on the same wavelength.
Ignition was getting played a lot.
Come on, we can all live without Ignition. But Michael Jackson, you're talking about 40 plus years, 50 years of just like being pop culture, the most famous man on the world. Like, bro, I remember going to Eritrea, like in a village, and they would know Michael Jackson. Wow. The most remotest village.
Man, we're from Africa. I know. MJ,
but this is the point I made. Listen, R. Kelly ain't going that far. R. Kelly ain't reaching the villages. They don't know R. Kelly there. You see what I'm saying? Like, it goes like religious figures in terms of fame, then Michael Jackson. Honestly. Not like keeping Jesus. It real. Yeah, religious figures like Jesus, you get me? Like, and then it's Michael Jackson. So I don't think it's possible to cancel him, in my opinion. I don't think it's even necessarily even feasible. And also, don't get twisted, like, there are still a segment of people, and I don't even know where I am in this thing, where it's like...
You're that conflicted, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what to believe, honestly. I don't know what to believe.
Because, I mean, I'm going to believe the people. Why would they lie about that? Why would you be like some 30-something, 40-something-year-old man? You're married, you have a family. There's nothing for you to gain by you standing up and saying to the press, oh, I was abused as a child. One of them was like, I was abused hundreds of times, thousands of times.
Mm.
What do you have to gain for that? Like, there's, you know, the world is changing, but not enough. There's still a lot of stigma. Like, those guys are still going to, like, go to the gym, and people are going to be looking at them at the gym. Like, oh, that's the guy that got, you know? So I don't know. Yeah. I just kind of feel like, you know, why should we not believe them? I want to hear from the listeners, though. Like, are you going to stop listening to MJ?
I feel like a lot of people probably turn off this podcast because I know a lot of Michael Jackson fans here. I just like, I ain't trying to hear this. And even a part of me is like, I'm not trying to hear this. Really? But I also have to think, don't get twisted. Like, when I say that, I mean, there's a part of me. But what I'm saying is there's a greater part of me that's also like, believe the victims. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, you're right. What is the incentive to lie about this? I don't give a damn. Like, you could
pick Wade Robson is one of the guys in the documentary.
Wade Robson, yeah, the dancer.
That guy was on all the shows that I watched growing up on MTV.
Yeah. He was like,
he was living with that.
Yeah.
All that time. Wait a minute. Michael Jackson performed with NSYNC at the VMAs.
Yeah.
And Wade Robson was one of the choreographers, wasn't he?
Yeah, no. This Wade Robson, who's one of the boys in the, or one of the men in the documentary with the allegations.
This goes.
He was tight with Michael Jackson. And up until Michael Jackson died, he was saying that the guy was innocent. I think he even spoke at his trial.
What? Yeah. I'm so confused.
This is what I'm saying. Don't get twisted.
Wow. Okay.
There's an element where I'm like, essentially, he's saying that he committed perjury because on his trial, he defended him.
Mm.
I said nothing of the sort happened.
Yeah.
Now that the individual is dead, he's not here to think. But then at the same time, Jimmy Savile's dead and we still...
Well, that's the thing. You sometimes have to also look at these things from the context of power, right?
Yeah.
Look, the president of America openly said he grabs women's crotches.
Yeah.
No one stopped him.
Real talk.
Right? So there's also that... There's this kind of like... hold
completely.
That people of power have.
Yeah.
And when you're in it and you're locked in. And I think that's why when they die, after a bit of time, you're suddenly like, okay, cool. They're not going to like be there to like kill me or threaten me or like whatever. Completely, I'm not saying that happened, but like, you know, no, I'm just saying that like people in power have this hold over their victims. And, you know, we're actually the privileged ones to have never been victimized in that way.
Of course,
but
yeah.
People who are out there who have been in abusive relationships or anything like that, they will know, and only they will know what it feels like to really be under someone's control and feel like you can't do anything.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting then once this documentary comes out. What do we as a culture, and I mean global culture, do about this? Like, because there hasn't been an example in this kind of way, like,
no way,
it hasn't. I don't give a damn what you say, like, this magnitude, like,
wow.
And I don't think they ever can be, honestly. I don't think they ever can be because I can't imagine anybody bigger than Michael Jackson, like,
yeah, let's pray not. Yeah, I can't have another childhood, like, idol.
Yeah, no, I'm sad all around. I'm sad that if this is true that these guys went through this, I'm sad that.
Someone's already writing the made-for-TV movie.
Basically.
Who's going to play Michael Jackson?
There's been a made-for-TV movie.
But it'll be like Thriller, true story. No, seriously. Who's going to play Michael Jackson? It has to be someone who can be It could has to be someone who is like equally convincing as black and as white. You know, when
they tried to get Jared Leto to play Michael Jackson, and you know Jared Leto, the guy who
shut up.
Yeah, and people complained. They were like, "Yo, this is why can't
you?" You know when Dave Chappelle does like white, like does like his white face presentation, get Dave Chappelle to play.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
I don't know if he can moonwalk though.
Yeah,
they'll probably get Bruno Mars or something.
Stunt double. Bruno Mars is tiny, man.
That's cool. They can use camera tricks. Tom Cruise, man, he's like 4'5".
He's actually he's tiny. So there was a really cool podcast that I listened to.
You listen to other podcasts? How dare you?
I'm unfaithful to Tekish. I'm unfaithful to Tekish.
I'm joking.
So Alicia Ramos, who's the founder of Girls Night In, we actually interviewed her for Pocket a while ago. She's a really cool founder. She started this newsletter called Girls Night In. It's all about people that... about women that want to stay in and not go out, like, and just chill. And it's really
A response to an increasingly hectic world,
right? Yeah, so it's very much focused on like self-care and whatnot.
Yes.
So anyway, she had been a bootstrap founder. I think she's raised the fund around now.
Yeah.
But so on the podcast, she's basically talking about the realities of the financial situation when you go from an employee to a founder. So essentially she said, listen, I was making six figures a year as a designer. I think she worked at Vox actually.
Oh wow, cool.
And she went from making six figures a year to basically making $1,500 a month while she tried to get this company off the ground.
Amazing.
And it's like, these are the real sacrifices that people make. I mean, not everyone's going to have a six-figure salary.
Yeah.
And so maybe the risk isn't as high. But, you know, that's what it requires at times. And I just thought it was a really cool, like, frank and honest conversation about the numbers. Because not often people are really that open about the numbers. Like,
no, that's true.
I think even generally speaking in society, we don't really talk about our salary. Definitely no. In Britain, like, we don't, like... I remember asking people at a job I was at, like, yo, like, how much are you guys making? Because I wanted them to know for my own negotiation purposes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't nothing that was enforced by the company policy, but people were just reluctant to even say. So very often, you're not going to get this kind of data about, let alone, you know, an entrepreneur. So... is any of that resonate with you? I mean, yeah,
I think there are a lot of bootstrapping founders out there. I mean, for one, it kind of also just like highlights like the privilege of entrepreneurship, right? Because the truth is like not many people can afford to take significant pay cuts because they're supporting not only themselves, but their families. Like there was that viral article at the start of the year on the black tax that came out in Fast Company.
Yeah. Did we talk about that?
I don't know if we did talk about that on a Tekish podcast. Maybe I will take a moment to talk about that. So in case you didn't see this viral article that was published by the Fast Company, what they wanted to talk about was a black tax in America, which isn't often publicized. And it is the fact that if you look at generational wealth in white Americans versus black Americans, like it's disproportionately growing amongst white Americans, and black Americans are actually struggling to even like create generational wealth. Because if you look at the average median household income of like black Americans versus white Americans, many black American households are actually in negative income. That is, their debt is exceeding their income. And, you know, there are so many structural reasons for this. Like most black households are like single parent households because like a lot of black men are in the prison system because it's like, you know, set up to basically like keep them there forever, even when they haven't done anything. And black people face tougher sentences than white people for the same crimes. That's just like one element of all the things that contribute to this. Another factor is the fact that if you look again at the average median household income of black Americans versus white Americans, a white household will be 10 times greater on average than a black household.
Greater in what sense?
Larger.
Oh, larger in terms of numbers, individuals. Yes. Oh, wow, I didn't realize that.
So white, like this is average median income. So of course it's, you know, it's not the perfect measure because you've got the super wealthy
of
and
course,
blah, blah, blah.
But
it's still significant. And it's the fact that if you then think of how we now come into the workplace, right? So I'm coming in, I'm me, I'm a black person. I have a white peer coming in. We're earning the same salary. The difference is her disposable income, by law of averages, is likely to go straight to her. It can go into her savings. She can invest it, whatever. Whereas, again, by the law of averages, me being a black person, I'm probably giving a proportion of my disposable income back to my parents, my mom, my dad, whatever.
Relatives.
People paying off debts, people paying off mortgages, people who are not in the corporate world, but who raised me,
yeah.
who are still struggling to make ends meet. And this article went on and on about how, of course, it's not just black families that are going through this.
Mm.
Many, many immigrant families are sending money back to relatives in their home countries.
Yeah.
It's just something which disproportionately affects black people the most.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in the article were like sharing stories. We actually talked about this on alpha.com because we were talking about how like sometimes you start a job and you're not being given a corporate card. I had this situation once where like I hadn't been given my corporate card yet and we had to like buy flights for a trip. And I was just like, I'm at the bottom of my overdraft. Yeah, like, how do I say this? And I was like, and I don't have a credit card because like my credit's not there. Like, you know, the reality of being a less privileged person. And thankfully someone was like, oh, I'll just put it on my, like on mine and expense both of them. And I was like, amazing. Like I wasn't in a position to do that. And I think sometimes companies forget that. And particularly like in the startup game, because so many people are so privileged in the startup world. I was reading an article the other day about a founder that put, you know, $70,000 of her own savings into her startup, which is of course admirable. But can you imagine having $70,000?
So
I don't know anyone. I literally don't know anyone
who can put that money into such a high risk venture. Because to be honest, putting your money into a startup is literally just like, there's a reason why you got VCs and
dangling
angel investors.
Dangling it above a fire.
Yeah, there's a reason why VCs and angel investors, you know, diversify so much across so many startups, because putting all of your eggs in one basket is not smart. So whoever that founder was, like, I hope it works out. Kudos to them.
Yeah. So, you know, definitely look up this black tax phenomenon, especially if you're a tech leader and you're thinking, oh, I want to hire more black people into my company. Like, this is another thing that leads towards inclusion. Like, are you understanding the circumstances in which people are operating and stuff like that?
And also, if you run like an accelerator or an incubator and you start thinking to yourself, why don't we have like enough black founders coming here? Like, if you are an engineer at Google and you're black, or an engineer at Facebook, there is a chance, like we said, that you are suffering from this black tax where you're supporting family members. So it's not so easy for you to then go, let me just leave my job, cut my salary in half, or not even like cut it by, you know, some giant fold, and take this risk for this venture. So everybody has to be cognizant of it. But anyway, going back to the
girls
the
point, I was gonna say one thing. There is like one upside. So if you really believe in what you're building, you know, you take the pay cut, but you also take a significant stake of equity in a company at a very high valuation, right? So that's the trade-off that founders make. They say like, okay, when you're at a company, you're, I don't know, creative director, product designer, whatever you are, you're on six figures. That's awesome. But you don't have any equity, right?
Right.
So your only compensation is the cash.
Correct.
When you then downgrade your salary as a founder, what you then gain is equity in a company, right? Which could be like valued at 7, 8, 9 figures. Who knows how big your market is or like how successful you could potentially be. So that is, again, what the risk is. So you're like basically sacrificing short-term cash
injections
for longer-term, bigger cash surplus.
I disagree, because most startup equity that's ever existed has gone to zero. Let's keep it 100. There's only a sliver of startup equity that actually ends up being something.
True.
In my opinion, what the trade-off is you're reducing your salary in order for you to do something that you care about, you're passionate about, that's your vision, and to have control of your destiny in that sense. Because to be honest, like, startup equity may or may not work out. So I don't want to tell people at home thinking, you know, like a budding entrepreneur that...
Oh yeah, of course, yeah, like, it's risky. It's like,
let's keep it, it's risky, and as much as you might go into this to be rich, we always say like, there's a lot easier ways to build wealth.
Oh gosh,
This path isn't for everybody. Oh, and like, you have to be mindful of that.
So did you see Casey Newton's viral story from The Verge this past week about Facebook moderators and the harrowing lives they live?
Yeah, I read it briefly. It's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy. Like,
I just feel like there's not a day that goes by now where
there's not something negative about Facebook.
Yeah. No, because someone posted a story in Alpha about like how they're selling like fertility data to apps, or like selling your data about fertility to apps without telling you.
Wow.
Which is like super messed up.
How are they getting that data? Like, what does that entail?
Because I guess like when you download the Facebook app, sometimes they can have access to everything on your phone or something like that. Oh, wow. To be honest, I only read the headline, but you know, someone, if you're interested, check it out. But yeah, so back to the moderators, content moderators, they're earning, I think the office that he went to in Arizona, they're earning a little over minimum wage, like a few dollars over minimum wage. But as you can imagine, the craziest collection of characters, like people are just like found having sex in storerooms because it's like trauma release. There's a guy that's like a flat earther walking around trying to convince everyone he's a flat earther. People are on drugs. They're drunk. They're like numbing the pain of like going through the most messed up, sordid images and videos. I mean, we are a disgusting race. Like, let's put it out there, because the fact is, like, it's not. It's so sad that someone has to do this job, because there is someone or many people out there who are posting this stuff. By the way, before I forget, after we talk about this, we need to talk about YouTube deleting all comments on children's videos.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't even know that. Yeah. We'll come back to that.
But yeah, did you see the story about Facebook moderators? What do you think?
Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me, really. I mean, you know, software companies, we're always trying to make everything super scalable. But when essentially you've got a publishing platform that any human being on earth can publish to, you're going to need somebody to moderate it. And, you know, it's, I don't envy their job at all, because they literally have to go through like suicide videos, death videos, violence, pornography. And I think they get like an 8-minute wellness break, which is like some of the most Orwellian shit I've ever heard in my life. Like, so they literally have to like, that's all they get. And I think some of them get PTSD,
of course,
and all kinds of stuff. So it's like
so dark.
Yeah, it's nuts. Like, I don't know what the thing is. I think, what is the alternative? Like, what could Facebook do to make it so that either A, those roles are much more pleasant, or B, that they shouldn't exist. So there's a way to circumvent the whole thing.
I just feel like the world is so messed up, because in this article, he talks about how like the average Facebook employee is making like $200,000.
Jeez, I need to get a job at Facebook.
Was that crazy?
Hire
like
me,
that?
Guys. Everything bad I said, I take it back. Hire me, please.
But like, at what cost? At what cost are you paid that salary, right? Where are your scruples, man?
Where's what?
Your scruples, your morals.
That was my morals. Way.
They're gone.
With enough money, I'm joking.
But there's something kind of messed up about the world where a job that's so important. So they're protecting our experience of the internet and our children's and our whatever. Basically, they're like keeping it safe and clean.
Yeah.
At the expense of their own mental health. And then they're being paid like a little over minimum wage. Like, the economy's messed up. People that are doing the jobs that should be paid better are instead just paying in their health and their trauma and their time.
Right.
And then people whose jobs are like, okay, don't get me wrong, it's also important and it's highly skilled, but you're not going to die. You're not going to get PTSD.
Yeah.
You're earning like 5 times what they're earning. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think Sheryl Sandberg is quoted in the article. It basically, I think it's an old quote of her. She says, people don't scale. Because I think initially they didn't have that much content moderators, because I think in the beginning they were just like, we need to be scalable. We need to make sure that, you know, we haven't got costs. And that's what human beings are, essentially, in these companies. Like, you're just a cost. So because of the backlash recently, the whole Russia election, they decided to, like, really get much more moderators involved. And this is what they've been resorting to having to do. Like,
just outsourcing it to some kind of, like, third party. Well, if their AI is so fancy, why don't they just let the AI do it? And another thing that really frustrates me
it's just not there yet.
It's just not there. Okay, fine.
And yeah, I can't tell when someone's like, you know, committing suicide or acting, like,
But what I think what's sad is that like there's too much at risk now, right? Like the reality is, if it were a smaller company or not a public company, you might just get the users to flag content that's inappropriate.
But they're already making us do so much labor. If you think about Facebook as a content publisher, we are the publishers, basically. We are the providing all of the content.
Yeah, that's what UGC is about.
Yeah, exactly, right. So then to expect us to basically be the ones to clean up the whole mess, it's like, guys, like you have to invest in this.
But maybe we should. Okay, hear me out. Maybe we should, because then we can be better at policing members of the community who should not be in the community. If there's someone over there who just keeps posting D-pics, right, over and over.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like, yo, let's get this guy out of the community.
I mean, I don't know how it works. I think perhaps people do flag up content and then that's when it goes to the moderators. That's my guess. I mean, I don't necessarily know how it works.
But there should just be like mechanisms. I feel that to some degree we also need to self-manage, because what's happening is Facebook are like suppressing a problem to keep us on their platform longer and to protect their business model, right?
Yeah.
But is that like a prevention or a cure. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I think
like,
what you're recommending actually would help their business model. So as in it would make them more profitable, because you're essentially saying as the community should do the work of policing the community.
No, because what I'm saying is like there's toxic stuff happening.
Right.
Right. And the sooner that it comes to the surface and we're constantly reminded that there's no way to fix it, the sooner we'll be like, well, we're done with this. We're moving on to another platform, which is like smaller, easier to manage, right, designed in a way where this stuff cannot happen. Do you see what I'm saying?
Like Alpha, right? Is that what you're trying to say? Alpha.com, you know, really go check it out.
What I'm trying to say is like, if the flaws, this is exposing the flaws of Facebook's design and the flaws of the quality of the community. It's grown too quickly. There are too many people on it. People with divergent views. People are exploiting the platform for their own fetishes and gross whatever behavior. So what I'm saying is like, instead of like hiring these moderators to like hide all the ugliness, hide all the bad stuff, they should just like let us see it so that we can be like, nah, I'm over it. See what I'm saying?
I disagree. I don't want to see that ish. I've got enough on my plate, so I'm going on Facebook,
but,
and then I've got to go in and
it's messed
see
up.
And then
it's
I've got to
see
this.
But okay, so your desire to have a nice experience at Facebook is worth someone having PTSD?
No, I think they should probably pay them more. One,
and that makes it okay.
They should invest more in it. No, but as in, there are plenty of people that have jobs that like I wouldn't want to do.
Of
let's
course.
Keep it 100. Like, if they're at least getting paid well, I can at least sleep a bit better at night. I'm joking.
I don't know.
Like, if they're getting paid well, and if like they're actually getting the appropriate training and the appropriate care,
yeah,
then I would be like, okay, cool. And okay, if there's more of them, so that there's not so much burden on so few people, then I would be like, cool. But Facebook doesn't want to do that because it's going to make them less profitable.
I just feel like Facebook is broken and we're now treating it like a bank that's too big to fail. It's like Facebook's too big to fail. It hires too many people. It does too many jobs. It's got so much power. It's got so much data. You know, Mark Zuckerberg's farce of a trial with the government. I'm not hating on them. I'm not hating on them. It's a well-designed product. Lots of people I know work there and I respect them and that's fine. But just like as a whole, viewing it holistically, it is not working. Like, is there a net gain? Can we still say with confidence that Facebook is providing a net gain to society when we have stories like
that's
this?
That's a whole nother conversation right there.
I'm
boy.
Just
that's
saying.
That's a whole
nother
kind
because,
of worms.
You know,
net gain, how do you even measure that?
We've got to take the rose-tinted glasses off.
But it's definitely
like,
questionable. It's definitely like, it's
well,
definitely a debate.
Are they
whatever.
Paying tax?
Probably not.
At the level that they should be? No, because they've got the big-ass office in Ireland.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's like, whatever. And yeah, then, I don't know. I'm just saying. Like, I just think we need to be really, really smart about our relationship with technology. These are like defining years. And we are at the forefront of it. And we get to make the decisions. And I just don't feel comfortable about this as a system. I think it's too high a price to pay, even if they're paid well. I wouldn't want anyone I know to work somewhere like that.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither.
Oscars.
Did you win any ABBA?
Wakanda Forever. Yeah, best costume design. You see me there?
Yeah,
you see me there on stage?
Yeah,
I'm joking.
Yeah,
I wish I was that cool. She was amazing. First black woman to win.
Yeah, amazing.
And loads of great awards for her.
Thoroughly deserved as well, because the costumes in Black Panther were so sick.
So dope.
Did
you watch the Oscars?
Nah, I got time for that. But I could, listen, you wake up the next morning, because someone like in the UK
it was
it's 1
a.m.
late. Yeah, like,
it was 1 a.m. our
yeah,
time.
I got a homie of mine, he's a proper film dude, and he basically like stays up.
Wow.
I don't have time for that. So, a lot of controversy about the whole Green Book film.
White Savior.
The White Savior. And there's a film that I have seen.
You recommended that film to me.
I said, go watch it. Yeah, find out what's up. Yeah, I was like, find it. Like, watch it. Like,
I do love Mahershala. Oh, I can't
you
say
love so
name.
Much, you can't say his name. Mahershala
his name?
Ali.
I love
there
him.
There we go. Bing. So this film has been mired in controversy. So the first controversy was the fact that on the press tour, the actor who plays Tony the Lip, the Italian guy, I forgot the guy in Lord of the Rings, Vito something.
Viggo Mortensen.
There we go. So even I got,
wow,
you got
I
one
remember
name,
that.
I got the other name. Yeah.
I've internalized racism.
He said the N-word on tour. As in, he was talking about it within a historical context. He's like, yeah, like, you know, it's very hard when you read a script and you got to say it, and they said it. And then people were like, eh, chill. And then the second thing is that when the film came out, people were like, this is a white savior movie.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch the movie,
and the family wasn't contacted.
And the family of Don Shirley, who's played by Mahershala Ali, were like, yo, we weren't contacted. So essentially,
where's our money?
I saw the film, and essentially it's basically the main character arc is of a racist who becomes less racist because of his interaction with Mahershala Ali's character.
Right.
And it's not necessarily, it's a very comfortable movie for white audiences to watch in a sense that it's kind of like, yeah, you know, it's a feel-good movie.
We're a bit racist, but it's okay.
It's a little bit racist, but, you know, this one black guy has convinced me that, you know, not everyone's so bad after all.
Yeah.
And that's
I've got
essentially
a black
what it
now.
Is. Yeah. And I think there's a reason why it's been so lauded by the critics, because it's a very safe movie in that sense.
It makes them feel better about themselves.
Correct, yeah. It doesn't ask any harsh questions.
It's like, oh, so it's okay to be a bit racist. Right, oh, yeah. Great,
It's so funny, actually, because when it got announced, there's a clip that's gone viral of Chadwick Boseman, who plays Black Panther. So as Black Panther was nominated, he looked back to, you can see he's looking back to his people, and he's like, I told you this bullshit was going to win. He had this look on his face, really? Like, I told you this bullshit was going to win. He had this smirk. I'm just like, I told you this bullshit was going to win. Man. So yeah, people saying it's the worst film since Crashed with an Oscar, and I kind of would agree.
I liked Crash. Really? No. I was like 13 when Rewatch I watched it.
I mean, it's not, that's definitely not best film of the year. It's yeah, no,
I crushed it. I was really enjoying, like, all the Green Book, like, people throwing shade on Twitter the next day. Like, Green Book, the kind of guy that...
Oh, yeah, Green Book voted for Obama.
Yeah.
Green Book, like, has lots of black movie friends. Like,
exactly. Like, yeah. That was quite funny.
Yeah. But, yeah, like, oh, come on, Oscars, man, do better. I was happy to see Spike Lee win, though. He won his first ever Oscar, which is insane.
Yeah, that's his first ever crazy. Oscar.
And like, you see, like, Jordan Peele in the audience was kind of like tearing up a little bit. A lot of the prominent black people, they were like, yeah, because it was his time, man. He'd been helped. Like, how can he not win it? Do the Right Thing, Malcolm X, like, come on, like, all these films that he's done that contribute to the canon of cinema.
Well, you know, the Academy is like 1% black.
Yeah, I know.
Someone did a stat.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Interesting thing.
Oh, yeah, the interesting thing is that actually. So, Black Klansman, which is a good film, I definitely recommend everybody watch it, he was produced by Jordan Peele. So, Jordan Peele, because of the success of Get Out, he was able to just say, I want Spike Lee to direct. And actually, previously, Spike Lee had been doing a lot of, like, Kickstarter-related, like, his own independent movies and getting Kickstarter funding. He wasn't necessarily in the good graces of Hollywood.
Mm.
And Jordan Peele, because of his success, was able to pull back and say, listen, this is one of our great directors. I want him... And look what happened. He's got his first Oscar. So my lesson from that is that when you do make it, bring your people back up with you. You see what I'm saying? And show love to people that came before you and that might not have got necessarily the shine that they deserved.
Mm.
And I respect that completely. So shout out to Spike Lee. Shout out to Jordan Peele.
Oh, I was just going to say, shout out the favorite, Olivia Colman, Best Actress, because that was good.
Ooh, oh, and Regina King as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to
them. But yeah, if you haven't seen The Favourite, you're missing out.
I haven't seen that either.
What's so
that
about? Good.
What's that about?
Three women leading roles. It's just amazing. It's based on Queen Anne's life, but it's like, it's a period drama where they like still use like modern language. So like they're effing and jeffing and they're sassy and they're awesome. No, that's the other one. Margot Robbie's in one called Elizabeth, I think. This is Emma Stone, Olivia Colman, and Rachel Weisz, who I first fell in love with during The Mummy.
Oh.
Great film. I don't know. You've never seen The Mummy?
I know The Mummy, but I don't remember her in that film.
Tell me you've seen it.
I've seen The Mummy.
She's the main woman.
About the YouTube thing then, the child's comment, the child,
okay, yeah, so basically, man, all the social media giants that I love are just forcing me to think about how I operate on the web. So we spoke about this in a previous podcast, that there are pedophiles openly operating on YouTube marking. I don't know, did I talk about this with you?
No, we spoke about it personally.
Oh, but we didn't talk about this on the podcast. Oh, okay, yeah. I'm blurring reality and
our whole life's a podcast whenever we're talking.
So if you didn't catch the story a few weeks ago, it was out in the press that there are pedophiles openly operating on YouTube, finding what, you know, we might view as a relatively innocent video, children playing, and commenting exactly the time point where you can see a bit of nudity. So they might be children, they might be preteens, swimming, playing. One of the screenshots that was in the article was like a child like on a hospital bed or something like that. And someone's like written on the comment like, ooh, 134 nipple slip or something.
Oh my God, and let's burn the world down now. Let's just like end it. Like, can we just stop this now?
It's pretty, pretty scary and disgusting. But they also had found pedophiles also like commenting, you know, messages, romantic messages to the children in the video. So like one of the comments that was in this article I read was like, hey, sweetie, you're so beautiful. You're so lovely. I want to meet you one day. I'd love to meet you one day. Message me back. And what the journalist decided to do was go in incognito mode, set up a new YouTube account, and then click on one of the videos. And what happened because of YouTube's amazing algorithm is that within minutes, every video in his auto playlist was a video of a child with a certain comment of a timestamp showing him where the child is exposed.
Mm.
So he was basically saying, like, it's not even hard.
Right.
Like, it's not even hard, right? So you're basically, like, doing, like, pornography for pedophiles.
Right.
Anyway, I read today when I woke up on my Apple News app that YouTube is now disabling all comments on videos of children. So this has been their response. What do you think?
I think it's wise, because that's the only thing I can think of that would solve the problem straight away until they can come up with a better solution. What is the alternative?
Yeah.
We're living in a sick world and there are sick people and they're going to misuse products. I wouldn't be that harsh on YouTube in this instance. I think where I do blame them is the algorithm bit. You know, you're talking about the bar on the side where it's just... And this is where I've questioned YouTube and its value in the world. I definitely think that the increase in flat earthers, the increase in anti-vaccination movement is directly correlated with the fact that YouTube always just feeds you the most extreme content. Because literally the content that gets the most clicks is what they're going to show you.
Mm.
And that's always going to be the most extreme. And I know people that have just gone into like certain YouTube searches and by the end of it, every single video is recommended. It's a Jordan Peterson video.
Wow.
Or every single video that's recommended is like, you know, some alt-right shit basically.
Yeah.
And it's like, because that is what gets clicks. Yeah, that's what gets clicks.
Mm.
And I think YouTube just cares about engagement to the absolute max capacity. And
that's their business model.
That is their business model. But like, there was a quote from Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn.
Mm.
I think it was at a conference recently. I think you might have sent it to me as well, actually. And he was literally saying that when you become big enough, you're not just about your customers and your users. You have another stakeholder, which is the society, essentially.
Yes.
And
preach.
You know what I mean? So YouTube is now at a scale where any tweak to the algorithm has real direct consequences
for
the whole of society.
Yeah.
And just constantly showing us what has stuff that has the maximum engagement is not good. It's great for your product. It's great for advertisers, but it's not great.
It's messed up.
Yeah, it's messed up.
This is what I'm saying. This has it again. So essentially,
this gentleman or person clicked on a video of a child that had one comment, perhaps, that was from a pedophile. And then every single thing was recommended to him was from the pedophile algorithm. Not the pedophile algorithm, but this is the content that pedophiles resonate with. Therefore, we're going to show this to you.
Yeah.
And
of course,
there needs to be more thought into the algorithm.
Doesn't know that he's a pedo, right? It's
no,
people that like this video also like these videos. So I'm going to keep serving it. And I just feel like...
But it has to be thought into this.
I honestly think...
There has to be more thought into it.
Dr. Fifi Lee, I hope I pronounced that right, but she does a lot of work around inclusion in AI. And she has talked about the fact that the people building algorithms right now are a very homogenous group of people.
Right.
And this is just the reality. Like, when we are in an echo chamber with each other, there are so many things we forget to think about and so many scenarios that we don't anticipate that lead to situations like this.
Right.
We need more people in the room when technology is being, like, built. And, like, the same kind of thing with, like, the debt you pay to society as a big company. If you're all the same kind of person and you're all doing okay, you're not even going to like care or like notice because you're going to be like, I'm fine. Right. And like, again, you need those other people in the room because you are not society. Right. I am not society. You are not society. Even us as a two, we are not society.
What's
the listeners, we're not. We're still only a fraction of it. And I just feel that like people just forget that and it frustrates me.
I think mandatory with every single computer science degree has to be a class in ethics.
Ethics, yeah.
100%. A class in philosophy and ethics.
With a black woman, Muslim, queer professor.
Like, and what you mentioned about, you know, having various different people within society in the room, that goes without saying. But in addition, we can't let... I mean, who are the people that are designing these algorithms? These people that graduated Stanford, Harvard, and, you know, they've got a computer science degree. But that doesn't mean they know jack all about the human condition or
of
how
course.
The human mind works. The worst thing was remember the WhatsApp thing where like they put in the stop now where you can only forward up to a maximum of 5 messages.
Yeah.
Because in India, people were sending things that were ending up in like lynches.
People getting killed because they were like,
yeah, sending like, oh, so-and-so actually is a witch. Let's go kill them. And it would spread to a million plus people.
Mm.
And then before you know it, this person would be, you know, hung, drawn, and quartered. And the engineers in Palo Alto are not thinking, what is life like in rural India? What is life like in the rural part of this society? You don't know.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So having different types of people in the room and having a training in the different ethical consequences of your actions.
Yeah.
It's a mandatory now.
Yeah.
It's got to be mandatory. I was talking to you actually, just filling our audience in. So I saw a talk with Sam Altman, is he running YC now, or is it Michael Seibel? Who's running
YC? I think
YC?
He's president, yeah.
He's president of YC.
And Michael Seibel's CEO.
Michael Seibel's CEO. So Sam Altman was basically saying that, you know, there's only a small fraction of people that are designing a lot of the machine learning algorithms. So I was like, we need to start funding scholarships for different people in society to do machine learning and AI at university level. And one of the ideas I had is I would love to fund like a scholarship for black women to go and do an AI or machine learning degree or postgraduate. I mean, I don't have the resources to do that myself, but if anyone's listening to that and is rich, like, holler at me, we should set that up, because end of the day now, this is affecting us all.
Mm.
Can't just be that 20-something white men are determining all of our realities, and that's essentially what it's essentially
it's
what
hard
it is.
Though, you know what I mean? Like, I agree that that's a great idea, but we need our representation, greater representation at every level, because we all know what it's like to be junior in a company. Anybody listen to you?
Right. Yeah, right? That's true.
So it's like, fine, great. Let's like bring a bunch of engineers. I'm not saying we shouldn't do that. We should absolutely do that. But like, right. Companies should feel an obligation now, an urgent, urgent, urgent one to, I don't know, like lure researchers out of academia to like participate at a leadership strategic level in like helping them get better and helping them do stuff. Because this is way more urgent a problem than we think it is. Just like climate change. Mm. Everyone's like, oh, we're approaching the point of no return. Man, we passed that point. We passed that point a long time ago, at least from where I'm standing.
Do you know how guilty I feel that it's hot in London in like February?
Thank you.
In February.
18 degrees.
I'm walking around and it's hot in London in February. I'm like, yeah, man, the weather's here. And
there
like,
was a
friggin'
forest fire in like northern UK. Like, anyway, let's not be all doom and gloom because people might be on their way to work as they listen to
guys,
this.
It's over. It's over, guys. It's over. We're done. It's a wrap.
Trying to have a nice day. Do you prefer working from home or working in an office?
I never want to work in an office ever.
Well, you'll be pleased to know that according to research from Inc.com, research that they reported, working from home makes you happier and quote unquote massively more productive. Would you say that's true?
Oh, you know what? It depends on the person. Because I know people that work from home.
I'm talking about you.
Okay, yeah, cool. But can I just like expose some people quickly
first?
Yeah.
Go on.
I know some people that work from home and they don't do anything, but they're not in tech. They've just got some job where they're just working from home. But generally speaking, me personally, like, yeah, much more productive. I just have to like wake up so early and commute. Mm-hmm. I can kind of just like, you know, it's just everything's just more convenient. And also, to be fair, most of us that work in offices, or when you do, it's like this open floor plan BS.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like distraction.com. People are just interrupting you. You're just chatting with your homie. You're going for coffee breaks. You're just chatting it up. Whereas when you're at home, you just have nothing to do but work. And it's just like there's no one there to distract you. So I completely would agree with that thing. Your former employer, actually, Ryan Hoover, actually, at one point said that, actually. I think he tweeted how now remote work used to be like the anti-consensus thing.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of become the consensus thing. And maybe now the anti-consensus thing is like
making someone go to an office.
Making someone go to an office, yeah. So like, especially in tech anyway. Do you agree with the findings?
I don't know. I kind of think that like I'm a bit in a millennial techie echo chamber sometimes where I'm just like, yeah, that makes sense to me. And from where I'm standing, that does make sense to me. But I feel like there's still like so many industries I see my friends working in where that just like would not happen and that would not be cool. Like my friends who are lawyers, for example, like there's such a big cultural shift that still has to happen in those industries. So I just feel that we're kind of like fortunate that like if you are working in the software space, then
do you agree with the findings that it's better for you personally is what I mean?
Oh, that it's better for me.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I also love working remotely. Working from home, you know, working remote is different because it's like you're working from home all the time. It's not like, oh, I have an office and I can do a work from home day when I want, because you're actually in a company that hopefully is like optimized to let you all work from home whenever you want or from a co-working space or whatever. And I agree that I am definitely like most productive when I am not being distracted by people, when I can choose when I work. So I can work when I know my brain is going to be optimum. I can exercise more because I don't have to commute. So I have more time in my day. I can cook my own food, which is like better than buying some like plastic box sandwich. Like for all those reasons, yes, it is better. However,
talk that talk.
Where are the boundaries, right? Where are the boundaries? So my flat's not huge. I don't have a home office like some people do. I'm working in my living room. I got this little standing desky thing that I can put on my kitchen table, but I don't have any designated work space. When I work from home, I'm just working literally from home.
Yeah,
what I find challenging is I'm someone that doesn't probably have the healthiest relationship with work. Like, I'll just work because I feel like there's always something to do.
There is.
And I don't think that's probably very healthy. You know what I mean? Like, how many years could I do that for? 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years? Like, blending work and life. You know, sometimes, like, Saturday, like, oh, I'm not going to do any work on Saturday. I'll catch up on Sunday. But then suddenly I'm on my laptop. I'm like doing life admin and an email pops up and I'm like, well, maybe I'll just do that now. Yeah, and then it's like, you're sucked into it. And we were talking about this last night. I had some friends over. We're talking about the millennial burnout generation. We're talking about this. We're talking about that. Out of the three of us here, we were all still working. It was about 10 PM and we had also worked on Sunday. Wow. One of them had done a conference call.
Wow.
And I was like, see, our parents didn't have to go through this, right? There was no smartphone. There was no email. When you walked out the office, you were done. Maybe you're a doctor. You had to be on call, whatever. But if you're doing like office jobs like us,
right,
you weren't like 24/7, whatever. And I just feel like one of the downsides of our generation, like it's all good and well for founders like Ryan, who in a way can like benefit from that culture because they own a company and they have people working for them,
right,
to be like, oh, remote life is the future. But we have to be super mindful of the cost that we're paying to be more productive because the truth is mental health issues are on the rise. Stress and anxiety is on the rise. Some people are lonely as hell working from home and working remotely. And so unless you as an employer or even as an individual are like carving out healthy boundaries where you're like, no, this is my gym time. No, this is my offline time. Then I think 10, 20 years down the line, we're going to have a big ass backlash. Where people are going to be like, I want work to be in a work designated zone. And then I want my non-work time where I can recharge, I can refresh, I can have fun to be in a place that work cannot even touch, separating that church and that state.
Yeah, 100%. I like that metaphor. I definitely think you have to have a designated work area. And if it's somewhere like that you chill out normally, it's really bad because you're just going to get into the habit of
But the reality is like...
If you haven't got a space, I understand. But I just mean that it's... Yeah.
You build me an office. To be fair, I do have a co-working space, but then I got to commute. And
that's
then
not it, remote then, is it? I mean, it is kind of remote. Yeah. I guess remote is anything where you're not in one central office with all your teammates.
Mm-hmm.
One other downside I've heard about remote work is if you're working at a company where some of the most of the team is not remote, but you are remote.
Yeah, that's
You
hard.
Can end up feeling like you're not really part of the company and you're not really part of the team. And that... For it to work, everybody kind of has to be remote. Otherwise, you just feel left out. You're like, well, I'm the one who doesn't know anybody, if that makes any sense. And yeah, the loneliness thing is real. Like, it's a very isolating experience, really. I think one hack I would give is that if you have multiple remote workers, you should kind of link up and maybe just like work together sometimes every now and then. Because otherwise you're just going to be like, you still need human contact, if that makes any sense.
You do.
But that doesn't mean that we miss being packed in like sardines to trains trying to get to work at 7 a.m. and, you know, next to somebody with sweaty armpits all up in your face on a packed out commute.
Talk about yourself.
So I read an interesting article about how you know, we're always criticizing a lot of these tech platforms for the negative things that they do. So I thought I'd do one that's positive.
Fang.
Yeah. So this one's about Netflix and how Netflix now is basically opening up content from around the world. And I noticed it with Narcos. So Narcos was the popular series about Pablo Escobar.
Yeah.
That a lot of people that probably wouldn't watch subtitled content were watching a show essentially that's in Spanish. And even me now, that kind of wrote me in. And I find myself watching a lot more global content. I was watching a show, a Colombian show, which ended up being really like annoying. But it was about this slave woman who basically goes into the future. She's a witch, basically.
Cool.
Yeah, but then like I was like, oh, this sounds really sick. And then it turned out the plot was that she wants to go back in time so that she can fall in love again with her slave master. I was like, nah, you got me messed up. But anyways, like, it's really good at connecting people now with like global content. So I'd give props to Netflix for that. I know you watch a lot of French stuff on there. You say,
I
right?
do. Yeah. I love the foreign stuff. I think it's very interesting and particularly welcoming because I don't see that as a very like American thing, which is what kind of makes it like quite cool as well and makes it quite different. Because I think in the UK where we are based, we, leaving Brexit to one side, are very integrated with Europe, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're not very far from people. I mean, Ireland's over there, Scotland's over there, you know, if we're thinking of England and like you got France, you got whatever. And I think what's I've always really enjoyed about that is that I've never felt that far from different cultures.
Right.
And even London in itself is quite a melting pot. And by virtue of that, there's always been like a kind of sense of connection to the things that are out there. Like, it wouldn't be unusual to like see a subtitled film like on TV here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not going to happen a lot, but it wouldn't be unusual.
I don't think it does happen.
Really?
On primetime, maybe British on Sky. TV.
Okay, yeah, no, yeah, not on primetime. Yeah,
you wouldn't have a subtitled film at all.
But one of the things, but you might have a show like on BBC Three, which is like, oh, it's on BBC Three's internet now. But you know, you might still have something with foreign people in it.
It would still be quite niche. Playing a role. It would still be quite niche.
But I just feel that like in America, that doesn't really happen. Mm. I mean, it's been a while since I lived there, but I spend a lot of time there. I have a lot of family there.
Mm.
And America's quite closed off. Mm. It's quite, you know, it's one big ass country. It's like, you know, so they got enough going on in there, I guess, is how they see it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So in a way, it's kind of cool that a company that's based in America is like, has such an international viewpoint. And I'm grateful to Netflix for introducing me to stuff like Terrace House. I love Terrace House.
I don't even know what that is. You got
it's Japanese. I've talked about Terrace House so many times. I'm genuinely hurt. I'm genuinely hurt. I love this show so much. I have listened back
to all our episodes. You've never mentioned it once.
Literally chomping at the bit, waiting for the last bit to drop. What's because it called? It's Terrace House. So good. Terrace Houser.
Okay, all right, cool, cool. Yeah. I'll make a note of that.
So good. It's like reality, three guys, three girls looking for love, looking for truth, looking for friendship, just trying to find themselves in a crazy mixed up world. And they're just so lovely and adorable and so nice to each other. It's not like Big Brother, you know? They're just nice to each other. They take a bath together.
Is this show paying you? Like, you love the show? You get
it's not paying me. That is how much I love it. I'm a bit of a Japanophile, I think.
Yeah.
Francophile, Japanophile, and then... whatever, tech file.
Speaking of Netflix, actually, I want to plug a show called Behind the Curve. And it's essentially a show about, it's not a show, it's a documentary about flat earthers. And it just follows them around. And it's just like, just getting an insight into how they think and and their worldview. It's just so illuminating. Like, there was a few of them that they would actually do experiments to prove that the world was flat. And every time the experiments were proved, the world was a globe. But they would still be like, the experiment was wrong. They were such in their own mental loop, they wouldn't accept it. Like, it was an article of faith to them. It wasn't science anymore. It was like, oh, yeah, I mean, the experiment was wrong. It can't be. We'll do another one. And it's like, guys, and I think it showed me as well that, and I've heard it said before, but I realize how true it is, the biggest indicator about whether you believe a conspiracy theory is whether you believe other conspiracy theories.
Okay.
So a lot of these people a lot of these people were, they would have kind of, as in, let's say flat earth was true, yeah?
Yeah.
The person who would discover it probably would be a scientist who's just a normal person and is like, actually, hold on, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Not the person who believes in the JFK assassination, the moon landing was fake, everything was, 9/11 was an inside job, like... Yeah, so it's a really interesting documentary. I recommend everybody watch it, Behind the Curve.
Okay, yeah.
You want to shout anything else? Let's just end up with a shout out.
Oh, well, I was actually going to say, like, shout out to female founders behind Dipsy.
Yeah.
Who have raised $5.5 million. Mm. If you don't know, Dipsy offers short-form, sexy audio stories. So, you know, this is a new type of porn, a new way to enjoy yourself, all from the pleasure of your AirPods or whatever headphones you so desire to use. And it's pretty awesome. So their market is mostly millennial women. I listened to some of the stories. Yeah, they're pretty good. They're all right.
Give me the short version.
So it's like erotica. Which, you know, some people like. So I didn't realize this. I was at a dinner party in Silicon Valley a few months ago, and people were talking about porn. It was all women founders. And the majority of the people were like, oh, I actually prefer to, like, read my porn.
Mm.
And I was just like, oh, how classy. Mm. So, you know, this is something that is really popular amongst women. They want to hear it. They want to read it. Mm. And that's what Dipsy's doing. There's such a boom in just audio.
Completely.
We were on the front of that wave. They might call us pioneers.
Yeah.
Hey, well, how about this? One last bit. I've got a new segment.
Go on.
It might never happen again. Go on. Techish, believe it or not.
All right, go on.
Okay. Shoot. Well, okay. True or false?
Okay.
A guy was filling out an application to be an intern at Bloomberg.
All right.
And he was asked to select his ethnicity.
Okay.
And amongst the list of options were yellow. And mulatto. True or false?
100% true.
I don't even know why I'm laughing, because this is actually really sad.
It's laughter of despair. Yeah, that's 100%
yeah,
true.
Yeah, it's a true story. Bloomberg had to apologize.
Bloomberg, do better. Do better, please.
True or false?
Go on.
Oh, well, techish, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Self-driving cars, aka autonomous vehicles,
have
been proven to detect light-skinned people.
Mm-hmm.
More easily than dark-skinned people.
Fam, pass me my bleach. I'm saying that's true. 100%. That's true, right?
As the person who exposed this on my Twitter feed said, in other words, black people are more likely going to get hit by autonomous vehicles.
Well, there's a bloody surprise. That's a joke. That's so sad.
I feel like this episode's been like all doom and gloom. Wakanda won loads of awards at the Oscars. Black Panther won loads of awards.
Michael Jackson. Wakanda Forever. Yes, it's been quite a thing.
Can't even say his name anymore. We're going to have to say something else.
So that wraps up this episode of Techish, and it has been a bit of a dour one. We've kind of talked about a lot of heavy and upsetting things, but I want everyone to remember that the world is still a good place.
Of course.
And to live your life, enjoy yourself.
Yeah. Say three things you're grateful for.
Yeah, have a gratitude list. That always helps me. And thanks so much for listening. Shout out to our audience. Use the hashtag Techish.
Our sponsors.
And our sponsor. And when you get a chance, go to alpha.com.
Alpha.com, ELPHA. It's like alpha with an E.
Okay.
New conversations happening daily.
Yeah, and check out peopleofcolorattack.com as always. And yeah, catch you next week. Thanks for listening. Ciao.